Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hey everyone, it's Hal and Flynn from None But The Brave. Got something a little different for you today, another crossover episode. And Flynn, why don't you tell the audience what they're going to hear?
Their show is called One Hit Thunder, and as the title suggests, it's about one-hit wonders. And they pick one, and they discuss it in depth from, could be from any era. And the one we picked to discuss is John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band's On the Dark Side, a song which a lot of people seem to confuse with Bruce. And he's not technically a one-hit wonder. He had a couple of other songs, but On the Dark Side was definitely it was a top 10 hit. And we talk about its role in the film Eddie and the Cruisers, from which and it appears on the soundtrack. And it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. And without further ado, on with the show.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed. And you can live off royalties forever. And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder or is it one hit thunder?
So Hal and Flynn, welcome to One Hit Thunder. We're very excited to have you guys on today because you host a podcast called None But The Brave about Bruce Springsteen. So we thought it would be really awesome to have you guys on to talk about a song that probably has been mistaken for Bruce Springsteen more than any song has ever been mistaken for somebody ever. Would you guys agree?
Absolutely.
Actually, the only other I can think of is the song Oh Sheila by Ready for the World. So many
right.
people associate that one with Prince.
And that's
I'm sure
a good
a lot
call.
Of it just has to do with Sheila E. being kind of in Prince's stable of artists.
Well, those are probably
also,
the two.
Also, I think we talked about a little bit on the Sinead O'Connor episode, but really the version of Nothing Compares to You isn't actually Prince, right? It's like a group that Prince had signed that he wrote a song for.
The Family or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, The Family but, or something like that.
Yeah, but nobody knows yeah. that song. Nobody knows the original Nothing Compares to You. That was
That's
like a
very
deep
very
cut.
Fair.
My first question to you guys is, after we do this episode, I know you guys do None But The Brave, but have you considered doing None But The Beaver?
No, we have not.
No John Cafferty podcast coming. But, you know, when we talked about doing this episode, you guys did mention that you do know a little bit about John Cafferty, right? You, before we even talked about this.
Yes, I've actually seen John Cafferty back in the 80s. One of the few times I ever won tickets off a radio station, I won tickets to see John and the Beaver Brown Band. This was, I think, in 87 or 88, to see a show at the famed Capitol Theater in Passaic, New Jersey, which is no longer there anymore.
Nice. Right. Was it good?
All right.
To the extent that I remember it, it was fun.
Yeah.
As you we're going to get into, it's obviously, I don't think he's intentionally riffing on Springsteen, but it's there and you can't miss it.
Right.
So it was sort of like seeing, I wouldn't say like a cover band, but it was like seeing a Springsteen-esque band, but obviously not at the same level.
Right.
All right. I think it's fair. All right. So I'm going to try to do this in three chunks, essentially. But the first two pieces are going to run together on a train for a little bit. So let's start with John Cafferty. John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band formed in 1972, originally just under the name Beaver Brown, after a color that they saw on a paint can. They were just a bar band from New England, but they were starting to gain some traction. In fact, in the 80s, they released a self, like a single, a two-sided single, and they sold 10,000 copies of it and had some radio play going up and down the East Coast. But they were ignored by every major record label for reportedly sounding too much like Bruce Springsteen.
You would think labels would be clamoring for people that sound like Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah,
though.
Another person
not,
that sounded like
maybe
a
not
very
exact replica.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things is that there was kind of that Middle America rock. That Bruce is definitely one of the pioneers of, or at least one of the more famous. And then you got John Mellencamp in there as well. And right. So I think John Cafferty just kind of, he had that same sound. And, you know, it's not his fault that someone else made it bigger at the time in the form of Bruce Springsteen.
Which I was thinking that too, like with the bands forming in 1972, like that would put them kind of forming close to the same time, right? Like you guys are the Bruce Springsteen experts, but I feel like early 70s is about when him and the E Street Band start doing stuff as well, correct?
Yeah, he was signed to Columbia in 1972, but he was more signed, or at least as the guy who signed him, John Hammond, as more of a solo artist, one of these singer-songwriters that kind of were popular at the time, but he was the one who wanted to bring his band in. So it's kind of hard to really describe the first two albums, Greetings from Asbury Park and The Wild, the Innocent, and the E Street Shuffle, as having any kind of heartland rock sound to them. That's the word I was looking for earlier, heartland rock.
Right.
Yeah. That sound really didn't come from him until, I mean, I would even say the Darkness album in 1978. I think Born to Run does not have that sound, but that's my opinion.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair assumption. Now, what I want to jump over to now is the production of Eddie and the Cruisers, right? So John Cafferty has this single, no record labels are interested. He sounds too much like Bruce Springsteen. And then they're making this movie, Eddie and the Cruisers, about a band, a one-hit wonder band from 1963 that just disappears after their big hit. And when writing the film, the writer said that he wanted the band to sound like Dion and the Belmonts, but with elements of Jim Morrison and the Doors. But since, as he was working on the script, he was like, well, this is a Jersey band. It should maybe have a bit of that Jersey sound, which immediately makes him think of Bruce Springsteen. So he gives these notes to Kenny Vance, who's going to be the music supervisor. And he says, Kenny, I need to find a band that has elements of Bruce Springsteen, the Doors, and Dion. If you can find me that's going to be our band. Now, unbeknownst to him and probably unbeknownst to John Cafferty at that time, Kenny Vance is a huge fan of John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band. So he immediately knows exactly the artist that he wants for this. Kenny Vance has a pretty interesting career. He wrote an awesome song called Looking for an Echo. I don't believe it was ever a massive hit, but it's literally a song about reminiscing about 50s rock and roll that was written in like the late 60s, early 70s, the doo-wop and stuff like that. And he went on to be the music supervisor for a lot of films that were looking for a authentic 60s sound. For some reason, Kenny Vance became the go-to guy if you wanted a 60s sound in your movie. So he brings John Cafferty to the table. They put together this soundtrack. They're going to score this movie. This seems like it is going to be the thing that changes their career forever. And they put out the lead single, On a Dark Night, and it peaks at 64. No one sees the movie, and they pull it out of the movie theaters after 3 weeks. Eddie and the Cruisers is considered a massive bomb. It is devastating for everybody all around. But in the mid-80s, there was a beautiful new thing that was hitting the radio, the TV stations, called HBO. And they were buying up every box office bomb that they could get their hands on and playing it 24/7 on their network. And that's when Eddie and the Cruisers suddenly and unexpectedly became a cult classic. People were watching it all the time. the director of the movie had complained that the problem with the movie was that they had released it in September and that the movie was aimed for teenagers who would be in school at the time that the movie was in theaters. So why would they go and see it? It needed to be a summer movie with all this popularity, all this fame. He says, let's re-release the movie this summer, and it bombs again, and they quickly pull it out of the box office.
Wait, so that was summer of 84 they re-released it?
That was the summer of 84 he re-released it, and it was that re-release that a full year after it originally appeared on the Billboard charts, it hit number 7. So it was released on Billboard October 8th, 1983, and October 27th of 1984 on the Dark Side hits number 7 on the Billboard charts, surrounded by juggernaut artists and songs on this top 10. The top 10, it contained Some Guys Have All the Luck by Rod Stewart, I'm So Excited by the Pointer Sisters, Let's Go Crazy by Prince. This was at number 7. At number 6, Wake Me Up Before You Go Go by Wham. At number 5, Lucky Star by Madonna. At number 4, Purple Rain by Prince. At number 3, Hard Habit to Break by Chicago. Number 2, Caribbean Queen by Billy Ocean. And the number 1 song in America was Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You. John Cafferty ascends into superstardom.
Well, there's something you're skipping over here. Yep. Because at the time the film broke out on HBO was early 84, early to mid 84, and the entire world was waiting for Bruce's next album, which was Born in the USA. And at the time in New York, when On the Dark Side started getting radio play, referencing your earlier point that it's the most sounding like another artist you could ever hear, everyone thought that it was Bruce's new single when it first hit the radio, but it wasn't. And of course, Bruce's new single actually did have the word dark in it, but it would be Dancing in the Dark and it would arrive a few months later.
Wow. I thought you were going to say is that Matt just read the top 10 at number 11 was Bruce Springsteen with Cover Me at that that week. So actually, John Cafferty was higher on the charts for that, probably that one week and that one week only ever. But this song was above Bruce Springsteen by 4 spots at this moment.
Yeah. I want to quickly wrap up on Eddie and the Cruisers so that we can fully focus the rest of the energy on John Cafferty, because the fact that it bombed twice in theaters did not stop that train from rolling. So the critics were mixed on the movie. I actually think that the first movie is a perfectly fine, fun movie. Roger Ebert gave it 2 stars and said, despite having a good cast and terrific music and a very intriguing concept, the ending is so frustrating, so dumb, and so unsatisfactory that it gives the whole movie a bad reputation.
I can see that. I agree with that, actually. Yeah.
So, Chris, I know you said you've never seen the movie. The movie, it's been a while since I watched it. So, Flynn, you said you just watched it literally last night. So
literally
keep
last
me...
night.
Keep me honest on this, but I believe that it's presented almost like a TV documentary about like what happened to this band. And at the end of it, it's essentially like a rock star who ascended to the highest of highs and then dies tragically and disappears. And then at the very end of the movie, it's revealed that Eddie is still alive in disguise, watching the documentary about himself.
Wow.
And that's what brings us years later to the sequel, Eddie Lives, Eddie and the Cruisers 2, where Eddie comes out of retirement to make one of the biggest box office bombs of all time, raking in only $537,000 when it was released on over 400 screens, and then once again, quickly pulled out of the theaters shortly after its release.
What year was that?
That was 88.
Okay.
It was actually released in 89.
Oh, 89. Sorry. Okay. Shot in 88, yeah. Released in 89.
All right. Well, wow. To me, one of the main things of the movie was that they had just recorded this album, A Season in Hell. I think it was a reference to a French poet that Tom Berenger's character was reading at the start of the film. And then that poet, like, he disappeared just like Eddie does at the end of the film. But they had just recorded this album, And literally that night is when he disappears. He drives his car off the bridge, and they never find his body. And so there was the characters' houses kept getting broken into, and somebody was looking for those tapes because they weren't in the studio's vaults. And then at the end, turns out that Eddie's girlfriend had them, and she gave them to one of the guys associated with the band. I don't know if he was the manager or not. And so I'm like, okay, fine. Now we're going to hear one of these songs. We're going to hear it over the credits. We're going to hear how great this song was, how this magical mystery album, how it sounded. And no. And I was like, okay, I want to hear this thing now. I really want to hear it.
Spoiler alert, you won't hear it in Eddie 2.
Okay. Now, I guess they do play a little bit where they're playing it for the record company executive, and he hates it. But I'm like, this is actually better than On the Dark Side.
I've always liked Season in Hell, but I never thought it sounded different enough to John Cafferty's sound to make it believable within the movie that it's some kind of just real stretch into a new form of rock and roll that would upset the label to the extent that they were apparently upset, at least in the movie.
Yeah, I agree. It had the same sound. I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds exactly like John Cafferty.
Yeah, they go from On the Dark Side to this other song, and I didn't hear much of a difference. It was still good rock.
Well, one of the complaints that I saw from a lot of critics for the movie, which totally makes sense because it's similar to a complaint that I have every time I watch Dirty Dancing, which I think is an otherwise very good movie, is that the song sounds too much like the sound of 1984 and not enough like the sound of 1963.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah,
that happens to me every time when I'm watching, say, Dirty Dancing and like Hungry Eyes or Time of My Life comes on and you're just like, this sounds nothing like all the other songs that we just listened to, like Be My Baby. I would say he did a better job of at least making a song that had a 50s rock and roll energy to it, but it is so very 1983 production all over it that it just sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys about that because I'm not really familiar with pop music from the 60s. Obviously, I know a lot of the classic rock stuff, but I'm like, this doesn't sound like a song that goes number one in 1963 or 64. No. I never understood that one.
No, it sounds like the song. It sounds like the song that a bunch of obscure artists that are like beloved darlings of the 80s reference as a before its time failure of the 60s. now that we've covered the exciting history of the Eddie and the Cruisers franchise. Is it a franchise if there's only two? Sure, why not? Let's talk about John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band.
And, I have an important question before we get into John Cafferty for both of you guys. As huge Bruce Springsteen fans, when you hear this song, A, do you like it or do you not like it because it sounds too much like Bruce? And my second part of that question is, what if you don't like it or if you feel like it's just a Bruce ripoff or whatever, what is it missing for you? Is it missing anything or is it just another good song that kind of sounds like Bruce?
Well, let me start with that. When I first heard it, I guess it was early 86, or at least when I first got into Bruce in like 85. So I was part of that USA bandwagon fans. And I even, by early 86, I had gotten all his albums and even bought a biography. And then and this song came on the radio. I was hanging out with some friends and they said, Flint, isn't this a Bruce song? I'm like, I don't think so. I've never even heard of this song. And it's not in this little biography that had Bruce's records and even the B-sides. So I was, that surprised me. Now, I do like the song. Now, I also am a huge fan of 80s pop music. So the fact that it was on the chart so well and did very well, I like it. Now, the song Tender Years, which is also from him, which is, featured very prominently in the film, I do not like that song at all. I think that one.
Oh, why?
Really? I mean, I hate, I know John Cafferty is a very, very good songwriter for the most part, but I just think that one just sounds like too much of a I don't want to say parody, but it's an homage or whatever, but it just sounds too much like Bruce, and I guess the end, it's just not as good.
All right, same question, I guess, bounces over to Hal over there.
Well, as I was saying, I had first heard On the Dark Side in early 84 when we were all waiting Bruce's next record, and there was a lot of confusion because it really does sound a lot like him. That does not make the song... Well, let me put it this way. The song works for me. It's fun. It's got that sure sound. So I have nothing against it. You put it on, it takes me back to a time. Isn't that what music does? You know, it takes me back to my teen years. I have no problem with the song. And I have no problem in general with John Cafferty. Look, he's a talented musician who's been in a certain niche. And obviously, he faces comparisons with Bruce, and he can't live up to Bruce. We all understand that. But he puts out fun music, and if you go see him, which I did see him that one time in the 80s, I remember the show was fun. So I don't know. I mean, it seems in a way a little unfair for him to have to live up to Bruce, although yeah. The natural thing is that clearly people are going to compare them.
I mean, right. Here's the thing. There's like a certain look. Chris and I both grew up on a lot of 90s radio and a lot of punk music. And it is very easy for someone to be like, that band just sounds like this band. You know what I mean? And it could just be a sonic sound or whatever. You know, Stone Temple Pilots were told that they sounded exactly like Pearl Jam or whatever when they first came out. But this song, the more that I listen to it, the more that I look at it, it's not even just like this dude sings like Bruce. Literally, the lyrics even feel like they could have been in a Bruce Springsteen song. You know, like from out of the shadow, she walks like a dream. Like sounds like a Bruce Springsteen lyric.
Well, that's my
that's why there was confusion.
And that's kind of my problem with Tender Years. He actually sings the word "There's magic in the night," which is actually one of the Bruce's trademark lines from the song Thunder Road.
Yeah.
it's just right there. And then, yeah, there's someone once described Dark Side as being sounding like a river outtake, and which Bruce recorded 79 to 80. And I'm like, yeah, but I hear that. And I hear a lot of "She's the One" in there. And
I think this is a little unfair to Cafferty. The mission was they were trying to capture a Springsteen-esque sound.
Oh, and he nailed it on this.
Yeah, yeah.
He nailed it. So
I get that. I'm not trying to disparage him or the song he wrote. I like the song, as I said.
You know what's funny about this is, first of all, could you imagine Bruce Springsteen just being like, "Ah, fuck it. I'm just going to play this song." blowing everybody's mind.
He could totally do that. I saw him play "Achy Breaky Heart" one night.
Oh, yeah. My God. Look, are you serious?
Yeah. So there's a story that I heard that I love so much. And so there's a movie that's not a particularly great movie called Broken Lizards Club Dread that came out in like 2001. And in it, a character is a clear parody of Jimmy Buffett. But his name is Coconut Pete, and he writes songs like "Pina Colada Berg." And apparently Jimmy Buffett loved the movie and that character and even the songs that they wrote so much that he went on the record and said, "If this song is a hit, I will play Pina Colada Berg as part of my set list for the rest of my career." The movie was not a hit. He did not follow through on that promise.
Well, Matt, the story that I thought of is that when the last time that my band toured with or played shows with Bowling for Soup, so many people thought that they wrote Stacy's Mom that they just, it's a regular part of their set now. They play Stacy's Mom. They're just whatever, it's fine.
Just go to a Ryan Adams show and call out for a Summer of 69.
Yeah, right.
I saw Kevin Bacon do the song Footloose once. That was really kind of cool.
Oh, wow.
Hi, I'm Hal Schwartz from Nothing But the Brave, and I want to tell you about our exciting new sponsor, DistroKid. DistroKid is a service for musicians that puts your music into online stores and streaming services like Spotify. You keep 100% of your royalties. The DistroKid app is packed with features. You can check your streaming stats from Apple and Spotify, upload lyrics and song credits. You can also get notified via push notifications when you've earned royalties. With Mixia, a powerful tool for those without access to professional mastering engineers,
Users can put the finishing touches on their track in minutes. There's a simple interface that is easy to use even if you're a novice creator. It's only $99 for a year with unlimited master tracks. DistroKid also has a new feature called Instant Share that allows you to easily share large files securely. Send tracks to collaborators, booking agents, and anyone else you want to hear your work. Your music will stream at the highest quality so you can make a great impression. And the artwork files look great too. So check out DistroKid through None But The Brave special link and receive 30% off your first year. DistroKid.com/VIP/MBTB. Once again, DistroKid.com/VIP/MBTB. Thank you.
There is a lot of similarity between John Cafferty's career and another artist that we did an episode of. And I want to know if you can figure out who that artist is real quick.
Is it Robert Tepper?
It is Robert Tepper because John Cafferty, homeboy did a soundtrack in the 1980s. So you know what record label wanted to sign him right away?
Do you guys,
Scotty Brothers.
Do you guys know what it is? Scotty Brothers. Do you guys ever have conversations about Scotty Brothers records by any chance? Do you know anything?
We have not.
Do you know anything about Scotty Brothers?
Tiny bit.
Okay. Yeah,
just
so,
what I read today, that they're the ones who released re-released Eddie and the Cruisers soundtrack.
Yeah. Right. So the quickest thing to say about Scotty Brothers, and again, for those who've heard the Robert Tepper episode, yeah, I'm going to repeat myself a little bit, but basically, they were known for two things. Well, three things. One, being very heavily rumored to be a mafia front. Two, for pretty much exclusively releasing movie soundtracks, and three, for signing Weird Al Yankovic to a seemingly impossible contract that he was actually able to fulfill. I think it was something like a 14-album commitment that he actually completed. So Scotty Brothers, when you got signed to Scotty Brothers, boy, were you going to end up on some movie soundtracks. And a lot of those soundtracks were going to involve Sylvester Stallone. So John Cafferty, off the success of this song and Eddie and the Cruisers, went on to write the theme song for Cobra and the song Hearts on Fire for Rocky IV.
We got to talk about Hearts on Fire. We have to talk.
Quality guys... song. Come on.
Yeah,
Hearts
no,
on
no
Fire?
Oh, come on. I feel like, am I going to be the only one who defends John Cafferty?
No, because I'm going to tell you, his theme song for Cobra fucking rips. I love that song.
Look, I am all for
Rocky IV is a classic. Come on.
It is.
I will. So quick side note.
It is.
Before you talk about Hearts on Fire, I remember recently putting on the movie Cobra and I'm hearing this theme song and I literally thought to myself, man, Sylvester Stallone had the level of pull to get Bruce Springsteen to write his theme song. And then I was like, wait a second. And then I looked and I'm like, yep, John Cafferty again. He got me twice.
Well,
no, I'm sure. Let me ask, what was Robert Tepper's song? It was the one about...
No Easy Way Out. There's no easy way out.
Yeah. All right. Now, that was
so
from,
good.
Was that from the...
Rocky IV also.
That's also Rocky IV. Flynn has probably never seen a Rocky movie.
No, Rocky IV I saw. Haven't seen any since. But I thought it was... I was going to say it was with the arm wrestling movie. But
yeah. Over the top. Yeah. No, in a lot of ways, Rocky IV is the only one you truly need to see. Because it's the one that gets referenced with... excluding the drinking eggs and running up a stair, like the museum staircase, Rocky IV is definitely the one that gets referenced the most in pop culture, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. Rocky III.
Yeah, you got Mr. T.
I mean, it
in
did
Rocky
give us
III.
Mr. T
yeah,
and Hulk
yeah,
Hogan.
You got Mr. T.
Yeah, but the Rocky IV soundtrack, I will say, it is awesome. We were all in on Robert Tepper, No Easy Way Out. We were all in on Robert Tepper just in general. No one, I challenge you guys to watch Robert Tepper live videos. And I know Bruce Springsteen gives it his all on stage, but I don't know if he can hold a candle to how much Robert Tepper is giving it his all on stage. I'm not saying the songs are better. I'm just saying the dude is going for it.
Yeah, and if you watch a Robert Tepper performance, you get sweaty sitting on the couch somehow.
Wow, okay.
It's impressive.
Now the Rocky IV soundtrack also had Living in America, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
See, that was
it's
a nice
great
little hit
soundtrack.
For James Brown at the end there.
Yeah, it's a great song. But the John Cafferty song on Rocky IV, and I'm not here to badmouth John Cafferty. I came out of my, you know, studying for this episode as a fan, to be honest. Like, I did like this song to begin with, and I found some other songs I like. But Hearts on Fire, that is... first of all, it's... I think it's all synth. It's all synths. It's not like... It doesn't sound anything like On the Dark Side. It is an all synth song. And it is a lot. It is a Rocky montage song from the 80s to the core. Like, it is really...
I'm going to jump to the defense of John Cafferty right now, though. Did not write Hearts on Fire. Hearts on Fire was written for the movie by Joe Esposito. And I'm not sure if you recognize that name, but Joe Esposito wrote You're the Best for The Karate Kid, which was actually rejected. It was written for Rocky III, and Stallone said, I don't hear a hit in this. So he rejected it and used Eye of the Tiger instead, which was clearly a bigger hit. But then Joe Esposito then took the song to The Karate Kid, where it's the best song in the movie, as far as I'm concerned.
I love these guys who primarily write songs for montages and some in 80s like combat movies.
Well, let me quick question. Was his the song used during the montage when Rocky is like dragging a log through the Russian tundra, and when he's jogging?
That's Rocky IV. That's Rocky IV.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But I think that's no, because No Easy Way Out is when he's sitting in the car thinking about everything that happened to bring him to this point.
It's a whole montage summing up the last three movies.
No Easy Way Out was after when he's dealing with Apollo's death.
Yeah. He's thinking about everything. Yeah. God, Rocky, I got to rewatch Rocky IV. We've talked about it so much in the last couple months on this podcast.
Now, I'm going to defend John Cafferty here myself. I love the song Things Are Tough All Over. I think that's a really cool little song. I like that one. It's almost like he actually had four top 10 hits on the rock charts.
On the rock charts and even on the mainstream charts, CITY made it to top 20. On the Billboard charts. So
that was the tour I saw, the CITY tour.
Nice.
I thought it came out in 85.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide if I like that as a name of a tour or not. I'm leaning towards yes.
That was the big hit at the time. I can't remember what the name of the tour was.
Okay. I thought you literally meant the tour, like that there were shirts that said like the CITY tour.
I think there was, but I can't say
100%. Well, before we, make any big judgments on John Cafferty here, I do wonder to a certain extent, was this coincidental? I guess not in the case of Eddie and the Cruisers. Like, they said they want a Bruce Springsteen-ish type thing. But it is possible. It's not that crazy that two guys would write sort of heartlandish, blue collarish type songs and have similar voices and themes. It's not reinventing the wheel. I'm sure there's a lot of artists who kind of fit that mold, but maybe don't sound exactly like Bruce Springsteen. Mellencamp's a good example, actually.
Mellencamp had
a little, he had something about his sound that separates him from Bruce Springsteen, but I guarantee there were a lot of people in the 80s who were just fair weather fans who would mix up Mellencamp and Springsteen songs, right?
Yes, yeah. And I was going to say that the vocals on the Dark Side do sound exactly like Bruce, and I think that's the difference with John Mellencamp stuff, because Mellencamp has a very distinct voice, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And it's the music can be very Bruce-esque, that's for sure. But his vocals very different, which makes that different than on the Dark Side, because they just sound like him. It just sounds like Bruce singing there. One thing I did want to bring up, you're talking about the top 10 a little bit ago.
Yeah.
That I think that sound that Bruce had and then John Cafferty had in the song, I think that helped get it up there on the charts in 84.
It sounded different than everything else. Everything else was very synth heavy songs for the most part. But then you've got this purely rock song out there.
But I just think the Bruce influence at the time, and as you know, Hal would say, Bruce was on top of the world at that point. So anything that sounded like him was gonna in the fall of '84 was gonna have some success.
Yeah, I was gonna say so you guys are the historians that I am not in this, but '84 is that what you would say? Not as a touring entity. As a touring entity, it's a completely different beast. Is 84 kind of the absolute peak of like Bruce's radio mainstream hit? Like Born in the USA is such like an undeniable explosion there.
Well, really late 84, but 85 is really the peak of Bruce.
Okay, but we're like right there. But we're like right in that, like we're on that upward trajectory. Yeah.
84, 85. I mean, that was Bruce. He became, as I said, he became Bruce, you know, where.
Yeah, right.
One name. He became a one name kind of guy.
Right. I want to ask two things that have nothing to do with John Cafferty and have everything to do with Bruce Springsteen real quick, if you allow me to, as you guys, as the Bruce Springsteen experts. I wanted to know very quickly, A, have you seen, I assume that the answer is yes to this, but have you seen and what is your opinion of the movie Blinded by the Light that came out a couple years ago? Because that was actually... That is what made me a fan of Bruce, was watching that movie. It really gave me more of a deeper cut of his catalog and made me appreciate what he is. But as you guys being like diehard, long-term Bruce Springsteen fans, do you enjoy that movie or is that just like a pile of fluff?
Hal, you go first. I know your opinion, and then I'm going to balance it off.
Well, I have to be totally honest. I didn't love the movie. I thought it had a lot of passion to it, which I appreciated. And I think it worked for people like you who maybe were new to the scene, and that's wonderful. And they brought them some new fans. I did think the movie was over the top and sort of cringy, but that's just me. And again, anyone who enjoys it, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it a lot. I loved it. I connected with it. The writer, Sir Fraz Mansour, he and I are about the same age. I think we are the same age. And so the timeline when he discovered Bruce is almost identical to mine. I think he was a year or so behind me. In the film, he was talking about getting into him like late 87 based on some of the other pop songs that were in the film. But I really connected with the way that he showed how Bruce's music connected with him at that age. And that scene where he's outside and the wind's blowing and I think it was Promised Land that was playing.
Yep. That's the first time I ever heard Promised Land, and now it's my favorite Bruce song.
Yeah,
it's
that,
great.
That scene really, really hit me hard, I got to be honest. And then my wife, she's also a huge Springsteen fan, and she connected with it because her parents were also born in another country. Hers were born in Germany, and so there was a scene where the parents were telling the main character what he can and cannot do, and that really connected with her. So I can see where it's a little over the top and schmaltzy maybe, but I really liked it.
Like I said, it's what got me into Springsteen, but it also, I think when I saw it in my mind, I was also connecting it to like remembering the first time I heard Green Day. Like I think it connects with whoever that artist is that like really opened your eyes to music in a very different way. The other thing I want to know is with your Bruce Springsteen podcast, have you ever done an episode on famed Bruce Springsteen fan Adam Sandler's Bruce Springsteen parody, The Lonesome Kicker?
I didn't even know that existed. So.
Check
Nor did I. So it's fairly safe to say we have not done an episode.
Check it out. I can't wait to hear your guys' thoughts on it. But yes, he does a song about the life of a kicker in the style of like Thunder Road by Bruce Springsteen, like a harrowing everyday man story of being the kicker that no one respects on the football team.
Yeah, those kickers, they get a bad rap sometimes. They've even been eliminated from fantasy football.
It's true. Both my leagues, no kicker.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I've been in a couple of leagues for that. One's existed since the '80s, and I didn't join until 2009. And then I just joined a couple other leagues this summer, and it's like there's no defenses and no kickers. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Those are the positions I like to really, really kick at.
taking the luck out of it a little bit.
I think, a little bit.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
But as far as John Cafferty goes, hey, I was impressed that the band, September of 2022, celebrated its 50th anniversary with the release of a greatest hits album. And then on May 26th of the year that we're recording this episode, 2023, the band released their first new single since 1989 called Day in the Sun from their forthcoming album. And I got to tell you guys, the song ain't bad. It's like pretty chill, pretty good for not releasing a song in 34 years. I mean, it's not like I'm rocking it real hard, but when I listened to it, I was expecting something pretty bad. And what I heard was, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And I watched a video of them playing it live and they sounded good. And it kind of looked like the E Street Band up there. they have, I think, is it the same? I mean, they have a saxophonist. I don't know who, when it comes to E Street Band, I don't know what, is it a 6-piece band? Is it 7-piece?
Now it's like 18.
No, now it's like 20. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because he has a whole horn section and a backup choir. Right. And so.
Okay. Well, either way.
Core band. Yeah.
Yeah. But back in the day, it was, I think it was a six man operation, and Bruce and five guys behind him.
Right.
I actually found the date I saw John Cafferty at the Capitol Theater in New Jersey was December 14th, 1985. It was the Tough All Over Tour.
Okay, 85.
CITY was a single off that record, and the Romantics opened.
Wow.
That's
pretty cool.
That's good.
That's pretty cool. Now, Bruce actually did play with John Cafferty. It was at Todd's Place in New Haven, Connecticut. I believe, Hal, it looks like you have your computer logged up. I don't want to open another browser.
I'd have to confirm the exact date.
I want to say it was August 78.
Wow.
God, no.
So this song didn't exist yet.
Yeah, no. This was bigger than, this was before either of them really exploded, if it's 70. Well, I guess.
Bruce exploded.
No, that would have been right around Born to Run. Yeah, okay.
Well, Bruce exploded in 75 when he was on the cover of those two magazines, Time and Newsweek simultaneously. And he was in the midst of the Darkness tour when he played with them. I really do want to look it up to find the exact date of when they played together. But
that's pretty wild.
I think they did. I want to say they did Rosalita, which was one of Bruce's signature songs. Yeah,
They played it together.
Yeah.
Whoa.
They did four songs: Rosalita, Double Shot of My Baby's Love, You Can't Sit Down, and Pretty Flamingo. That's all courtesy of Bruce Bass.
Wow. I wonder if Bruce ever said anything about John Cafferty. Has Bruce ever spoken on John Cafferty, like when this was going on and everyone thought it was Bruce? I wonder if he said anything about it. He doesn't seem like a guy who'd be a dick about it, but.
Well,
he also dealt with that with the Dylan comparisons. You know, I don't think he gets wrapped up in that.
Yeah.
And there were so many artists in the 80s, even his friend Jackson Browne. Now I'm totally blanking on the name of the single. Flynn, you know the one.
Running on Empty, on the Boulevard.
For America.
For America. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that came out right after Born in the USA.
Yeah, I think that was 85. I think his album came out in 85 or 86. I think the funniest song about being confused with Bruce is Rick Springfield's song, Bruce. Are you guys familiar with that one? I'm seeing blank looks here.
Yeah, we did one of our earliest episodes that people never stop referencing is the fact that we did, in fact, do an episode on Rick Springfield when he's most certainly not a one-hit wonder. But I don't remember diving into Bruce, but I could see the confusion there.
Yeah, he talks about like three or four scenarios where people meet him like on the street and he says, "Oh, can I have your autograph?" And the guy pulls out a cover of Born to Run and he goes, "What?" He says, "Mr. Springsteen, you're a finest man." And then he talks about hooking up with a woman. And at the moment of when he was on the borderline, she called him Bruce. And then he talked about another verse was he was talking to his mom. And as mom was hanging up, she swear he heard her call him Bruce. So it's a really funny song. Go look it up. The whole like the first part is there's another singer has a name not like me, but it's not me.
Yeah. I want to bring up one last thing with John Cafferty before we get to the final segment of our show. The love for the song On the Dark Side still continues to this day. Last year, Corey Taylor of Slipknot released a solo cover of On the Dark Side to promote a new album that he was releasing.
Wow.
So,
that's interesting.
Of all the artists in the world, Corey Taylor, huge Eddie and the Cruisers fan, is what I can pull away from that.
It's a solid song. It has that rock sound from the 80s, that Heartland sound that, as I said earlier, Bruce and Mellencamp really took to the next level. And yeah, solid song. Really like it. And I hope John Cafferty is reeling in on the rights, on the royalties.
So Hal and Flynn, we've got to the point where we decide John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band. Did they bring the one hit thunder or was it a one hit blunder? And we don't have any real rules about how we decide this. I tend to take a look at the whole catalog and the whole career in general and make my decision as to whether this was thunder or blunder. So some people are like, based on the song, I'll say it's thunder, the career's blunder, whatever. But we'll throw it in your court. What do you think, Flynn, first of all? You seem to be a little more forgiving, I think.
Yeah, I say thunder.
Okay.
I like the song. As I said, it's not too much. I guess it's similar enough to Bruce, but it's not the tender years, as I said earlier. And I like the song CITY and really like the song Tough All Over. And the guy's been around. They've been playing music for a long time, and I hope he's made a good living off it. Hopefully he never had to take a day job. That would be my wish for him.
Right.
My hope for him. Not wish. It sounds a little too condescending. Sorry.
And Hal, the one person in this conversation who has seen John Cafferty live, how do you feel? Thunder or blunder on John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band?
Definitely thunder. Again, just going back to my youth, On the Dark Side was actually a pretty important song because it, 1984, I turned 16. You just think back to those times. I have very fond remembrances of the song. And it's funny because when I watch the movie now, of course, I'm like, oh boy, this is not as good as I remembered it when I was a teen. But as a teen, this movie meant a lot to me. It was when I saw it on HBO and it was like, wow, this is a lot of fun. And this is something I'm into. So I definitely go with thunder.
Nice. How about you, Matt? You go with thunder. I know it.
I'm going thunder, of course. I love this song. I love the movie Eddie and the Cruisers. I love the theme song that he did for Cobra. Like, the fact that it's been 50 years and they're still out there rocking their hearts out, and it seems like their new album has potential to be good based on this first single we heard. I think go John Cafferty. Thunder.
Is it? I guess it's going to be a quadruple thunder because far be it from me to lay a blunder on a band that's been together for 50 years.
Yeah.
And also, On Dark Side's a good song. Not so much of a Hearts on Fire guy. As much as I love the Rocky IV soundtrack, I'm more of a No Easy Way Out, Living in America guy. But I got to give John Cafferty and his Beaver Brown Band credit for keeping it together for so long. I think that's really cool. And to be, I guess, on the verge of a new album at this point in your career,
yeah,
I think that's really great. Hal and Flynn, it's been a lot of fun having you guys on. For anyone who doesn't know, You should go subscribe to None But the Brave right now. What would be your pitch to either a Bruce Springsteen fan listening or a Fairweather Bruce Springsteen fan listening? Or is there any pitch at all? Oh, this is a really good question. Is there any pitch at all for someone who's like, I don't really like Bruce Springsteen? Could you change that, hearts and minds?
The one thing I'll say is that we really do take the approach where it's not hagiography. We're not just deifying Bruce. I'm sure that Bruce's people think that we nitpick too much, but we've had pretty much a who's who of rock journalists on the show, especially recently. We've had Stephen Hayden. We've had Warren Zanes, who wrote the New Nebraska book, which is fantastic. We've had Charles Cross, who started Backstreet's Magazine. In the past, we've had Brian Hyatt. So I think we're doing a serious show that takes a look at the music and tries to provide some criticism and analysis. So that would be the reason to listen to the show. If you're someone who just wants to hear nothing but positives about the man, you're probably not going to be satisfied. And if you're someone who's not into his music, well, it's probably hard to see how you're going to get something out of our show, in all honesty. But I do think some of the conversations we've had are illuminating, especially for fans who don't know Nebraska, which is probably a decent number of people. The depth and the originality of that record and the importance to singer-songwriters, when we talked with Warren Zanes for about an hour, that was, I think, perhaps our best episode. We were very proud of the work we did there.
Yeah, we really go deep into everything. We do track by track analysis of albums. We follow tours. Going back, we did the U.S. Born in the USA tour on almost a leg by leg basis, if not even show by show. And we go deep. Sometimes we probably do a little bit too deep for people who may not be as familiar with Bruce's career as we are, but we hope to provide some kind of insight and in context to Bruce's career, and as Hal likes to point out, how everything, all the threads of his career have kind of woven together over the course of 50 some odd years.
Yeah, that's really the amazing thing about Bruce, is how so much of what he's been doing for 50 years actually fits together on a line, and there's a sensible progression to his music and what he has been saying within the songs. We talk about that a lot. And also the community that has been built around his music, which is very significant. We were just on with David Wild and Phil Rosenthal on their podcast, Naked Lunch. We talked a lot about this. Flynn met his wife. I have so many close friends. Children have been born, all as the result of this man and his music, where people have come together into this community.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And I think the good part for having a Bruce Springsteen podcast is, if there's anybody out there who doesn't at least like some Bruce Springsteen songs, I'm going to be like, come on, are you kidding me? Like, there's you might not like a song here and there, but it seems like a great majority of people in general at least like Bruce Springsteen to some extent. I mean, that just so many great songs. It'd be like not like it, like saying, oh, I don't like Elton John, I don't like Billy Joel. Like, I mean, these people that just have such long and prolific careers, somewhere along the line, they're going to have songs you like. It's the same thing I thought. I mean, I think that way about like Taylor Swift. At some point along the line, I was finally like, okay, this is good. You know, like it's these artists that are so prolific, you can't help but like them, especially when they seem to also be pretty solid people, which, well, Bruce, I listened to the Bruce and Obama podcast. When I listened to that, I'm like, Bruce is a solid guy. You know, that helps too.
I think further to your point too, it's like Rosalita is a completely different sound and genre than Dancing in the Dark, which is sound and genre than the entire Nebraska album, which is like a different, like he's covered so many different styles of, to borrow a quote that I used to hear from my friend in the comic book shop one time, if someone tells you they don't like comics, they just haven't read the right comic. Someone tells you they don't like Bruce Springsteen, they just haven't heard the right Bruce Springsteen song for them yet, because there's a lot of options out there.
Yeah, a lot of different genres. Yeah, that is for sure. He has solo acoustic like Nebraska, and then he has like the more the poppy rock like The River, and then, as you said, the big 80s sound of the Born in the USA album, and then he's got this Western Stars album, which is has that Western pop from the early 70s with the strings and everything. And a lot of different stuff.
Well, I also have to thank you guys for our first ever. I'm pretty sure in the history of this podcast, we've never had a quadruple thunder, and that is only possible thanks to the two of you. So everyone, go and subscribe, check out their podcast, and we'll be back doing some One Hit Thunder next week.
Yeah, go subscribe to None But the Brave wherever you get your podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
But here I am behind the wheel. Cause in the end, it might ain't over.
Baby, it ain't over till it's over.
And I can shake the way it feels. Cause something.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Ophalios of the band Punchline and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing Something Happened in 1988 off the album Lion. Be sure to check out punchlion.com for any upcoming news about the band. Our podcast is on Patreon. Find us at patreon.com/OHTpodcast for early access to episodes, bonus episodes, and a chance to vote on future songs for us to cover. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app. And tune in next week for more One Hit Thunder.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers, think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.